Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Wow, that was a nice game show-like entrance.
You know him. You love him. You can't live without him. Tim Goodman.
And there was a second career for you there, I think. Nice.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. Little showbiz. How you doing?
I am doing okay. I'm fighting through some shows.
Spoken like a TV critic. You got some, things you're having to work at, huh?
I'm hacking things down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they can't all be gems, folks. Sometimes you lose the draft to Dan Feinberg, and you have to watch those shows.
He's normally taking one or two for the team, but actually, my stuff is not that bad. It's just some of it's a slog, some of it's less sloggy.
Who's doing The Mist?
Dan already did that, and he was not pleased.
And not pleased. All right. Well,
pleased with what he saw.
That was the from listener Brando, who asked if we had opinions on The Mist. Oh. And quite honestly, I had forgotten that this was happening, and I read the story, and I think they did like an audio version of it at one point, an audio play that I listened to, and then they made like a movie, and now there's a show, and I don't think it's that interesting a thing to just keep getting remade.
You missed it out. Mm-hmm. I think it's just like a visual. Maybe it's a cool visual.
I think it makes it for a great elevator pitch.
Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of mist.
Yeah, outside the supermarket.
Uh-huh.
Yep. All right, well, you did review Snowfall.
Oh, I did.
Which is, this is John Singleton's show, right? About the crack epidemic.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is that it's like three people's show.
Oh.
And he's obviously the name out in front and center, and he's doing some of the writing, but there's a lot of shared writing between three people, and I think that can be problematic. Or maybe it can't on other series, but it certainly popped up here that it was problematic. And then I kind of figured out that they have three major. I figured this out after the fact, after my review. But they have three major storylines, and I'm assuming now that I think back on it, one of the three writers is writing each of those storylines, and that explains a lot of why it's not connecting in the middle. But yeah, my main problem with it, I had high hopes for it. I think that a period piece about crack cocaine from FX, just on the face of it, sounds like it would probably be pretty good. Set in Los Angeles in 1983, John Singleton involved. It all had the look of something that could turn into something kind of maybe Wire-ish. I don't know. But it didn't. And part of the problem is that, and this is in a nutshell, it's a 10-episode season, I believe. And after the first 4 hours, they have not got to the crack cocaine epidemic.
Oh. Okay.
That's a problem, I think. And, you know, I think, well, the deeper problem is that I don't believe any of the major characters would be who they are. There's a Mexican drug lord, and his daughter makes a play to take over the family business. There's a CIA agent who was helping the Contras fight the Sandinistas and Nicaragua, and he's trafficking drugs and for guns. And then there's this main character who starts selling cocaine kind of by accident, which is not believable. And then eventually, because we haven't seen it yet, I didn't get to it, he will be heading as one of the main dealers in the crack cocaine epidemic. But at no point do you think that this kid's not going to be killed immediately, or that the Mexican drug lord's daughter won't be killed immediately, or that the idiot CIA guy won't be killed immediately. And so it is no ring of truth to it. And, you know, there's not a lot of standout dramatic performances. There's not a lot of standout writing. And I think you can see the trend here. It's just not enough of anything. And in this crowded marketplace, I've already invested 4 hours, and we haven't even got to the point where he's going to start selling crack cocaine. And I'm not sure most people would want to go any further than that. I certainly didn't, so I gave up. I was done.
And you made the point in the review, like, in an era with this much competition for viewers, if you can't grab a viewer after 4 hours, then, you know, it doesn't matter if it's well made, and it might get better as it goes along. It's, the bar is pretty high, and that this one just sort of doesn't clear the bar for you.
Yeah, not even close. And you know, FX has been pretty good about this. I've said many times they're the best curated cable channel out there, and you can't win them all. They can't all be hits. But I think there's a deeper story here somewhere. I would like to see what's going on and why this didn't click. You know, maybe one of those things that I'm always fascinated by, where everybody's involved in a project and nobody can see that it's not very good. I'm always fascinated by that idea. And that could be at play here, but I would have thought somebody from FX would have been able to see these dailies and think, you know, these actors aren't that good, or this writing's not there yet. And shouldn't this be moving a little bit faster? And some of the accidental happenings of the main character, I mean, for Christ's sake, the kid's name is, you know, Franklin Saint. Like, talk about dropping an anvil on her head. He's like a good kid who goes bad, but you never believe, he's such a good kid that you never believe he can go bad. And I mean, like, literally the first scene is him like stopping two young kids in the hood from stealing from the ice cream vendor, snatching some ice cream and running off with it. So this kid's all of a sudden going to start saying, I'll start selling, moving some coke for a Israeli coke dealer. I don't think so. So I just never, ever bought it. And it's just one of those shows I think is, there's inherent flaws that nobody saw, or if they did see it, they just thought, yeah, too late to stop this train, but not too late to stop people from watching it.
All right, that's on FX. That's where you should not go. You and Dan did your roundtable about the Emmys, because we are now entering Emmy nomination season. Mm-hmm. What do you want to talk about? I mean, people should read it. It's big. You guys talk about like everybody you're kind of hoping to see get nominated. And
yeah, it's a very big piece that we covered a lot of ground. We didn't even get to anybody who was the in the supporting categories. And there's just a lot, there's just a lot of ground to cover. There's a lot of shows that are obviously, Game of Thrones won't be eligible. Tatiana Maslany will not be eligible. So, you know, so we went in to see like, what were the outliers that we hoped would get nominated? What's the new blood coming in? And then we just, like, from there, we just kept going and saying, okay, what categories are the ones that could be shaken up this year? And then just covered as much as we could. Mostly we talked about Carrie Coon, because she did double duty in The Leftovers and Fargo, and she's spectacular in both. And, you know, there was some long-lost love for Rectify coming back around. It's easy to forget, you know? It's easy to forget, as I did, that Rectify's out there. I talked about like new blood, like Westworld, and whether Handmaid's Tale will get in because Hulu doesn't have a whole lot of pool, and we were just kind of all over the map. But it was fun to do.
Atlanta sounds like has a pretty good shot, though, right?
Yeah, I think Atlanta does. I think Atlanta will be the breakout surprise. It'll be the, you know, it'll be the Transparent of this year. But I think it's interesting because it's another one of those comedies that is funny, but it's got bigger topics on its mind. And it's also kind of all over the map on things that it's willing to do. So, but, you know, I just think that there's just so many good performances. The overall show is amazing. And there's lots of dream about that. It's funny because like Mr. Robot, like no one's talking about Mr. Robot this year at all. And that was a big winner last year. So it's going to be a weird... it's going to be a weird Emmys, I think.
And where do you think we're going to come down on the eternal awarding of Modern Family? Is it going to go away finally?
I think this is the year it doesn't get nominated. Yeah. That's a tough one. I mean, this, I used to really love that show. And at some point, it's not, you know, it's funny because, like, Veep is nominated as much these days as Modern Family. You know, it's Veep, and you know, Julia Louis-Dreyfus wins all the time. So there's that same thing. But the difference is nobody's like, oh, Veep again. You know? And like when I heard a lot of grief from the Modern Family creators and people around it about like my kind of incessant time for this show to go. But like that's the thing. You don't hear people say, oh, Veep, oh my God, this show. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus, just she shouldn't even be there. She should totally be there. She could easily win again. And Veep hasn't missed a beat. It's still as great as ever. So it's just, that's a thing that Modern Family can't duplicate. And as great as it was, and it's still pretty good. And a lot of times I've stopped watching it though. So, but you just, that's the thing. Like people say, well, if you stopped watching it, that's a good show. A show like that will get periodically better through episodes, off of good episodes. They won't have good seasons. And Atlanta and all the other competitors had good seasons.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a hypothetical here, which is if you could make one thing happen for sure at the Emmys, what would that thing be? What would the thing where you'd use your power and say, this needs to happen? So probably something that's not likely to happen unless you use your power.
Oh, that's a great question. It can only be one thing.
Well, okay. We'll start there. You can't wish for more wishes, but
I know you can't wish for more wishes.
Where do you use your power? I'll give you three. How about that? I'll give you three wishes.
Okay. The first one, because it's tough to stick which one you would do first. I would stick Leftovers in Best Drama. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to end up number one or very close to it on a number of people's year-end lists. And the voting members of the Emmys have not been on board with this show. And it's such an outlier. There's like zero chance it's going to get nominated. So that'd be one. Carrie Coon being nominated would be two. That's the thing that I would do because I think that although there's a possibility that she will anyway, but I would have her definitely be nominated because she is really the standout performer in two great series this year. And thirdly, also, how about a little love for Rectify? Another thing that would never happen because of, you know, it's just been ignored constantly. But so to me, the two of the better dramas that won't get recognized are going to be The Leftovers and Rectify. So I put them in, and then Carrie Coon. So that's kind of easy.
I was going to toss in Aya Cash in You're the mm-hmm. Worst, mm-hmm. which is a like bargaining stage sort of thing, which is like there's so many comedies you pointed out that it's hard to imagine. There are going to be a lot of fantastic comedies that don't get nominated because there is you reeled off Veep, Silicon Valley, Atlanta, You're the Worst, Fleabag, Master of None, Catastrophe, Insecure, Blackish, and Girls.
Yeah.
Right. And then you don't even have like the outliers like Casual and People of Earth. So, you know, You're the Worst. Is it going to fit in there? Maybe, maybe not. Probably not. But Aya Cash is a good example, given the range that her character had to go through that she had to play in You're the Worst this season. I might use my whatever genie Emmy wish for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's and I know that Dan was a, you know, he wanted to see other ones in as well. So there's tons, right? I mean,
yeah.
Speechless and The Good Place from the and Blackish.
Oh, Good Place is uh-huh. is another great example of if you want to honor a network comedy that was so good. Well, you know what? There are only they don't give out awards or even nominations to everyone because it wouldn't be interesting then, right? Everybody wins, yay!
Yeah,
right?
I know that's the thing. But it's funny because even when I do my year end thing where I have so many recognize so many shows,
yeah.
It's still as I point out to people, they're like, oh, 38 or 46. How can there be that many great shows? I'm like, because I left a ton of them off. Left a ton of other really good shows off, and that's the world we live in. And I think you and I talk about TV every week, and I'm a paid television critic, but like when people are just asking, like, what is out there? What can I watch? I think they lose the bigger picture that there are hundreds of really good shows. And, you know, and that's not even you want to talk about really good, great? I mean, you might have to break that down into, you know, 10, but really good shows, you could get hundreds. And that's, you know, and again, you and I have talked about all this stuff that you can't, that that ends up on Netflix, and you discover it, and you're like, oh my God, this is so great. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about it. So that's why there are so many shows out there that are really good in this like 500 show universe. And I always try to convince people that, you know, 38, 36, 48, 42, whatever, that's right in the wheelhouse of, you know, what's out there. That's 10, that's barely 10% of all the scripted, you know, stuff. So it's not outrageous.
Yeah. Well, when do the nominations come out? Do you know?
I believe it's in July. I think it's like July 16th, something like that.
Soon enough that you can do this article and hope that people who have a vote for nominations might actually read it and be like, oh, I should look at that. That's an interesting
idea.
Yeah,
we might do more too. It's because there's other things to touch on. We didn't get again to the supporting categories, and there's so many good ones there. But yeah, it's, oh my God, some of these categories, you're just like, a lot of really good people are going to be left out. And as Dan pointed out, Dan likes to get into the finer details of, you know, maybe this person shouldn't have been in the supporting category. I'm just taking them as they are, you know, like Anthony Hopkins and stuff like that. And there are probably people who probably would have done better in the supporting role rather than in the lead role. And I think there's a couple of choices in Westworld that you could pick. But, you know, you're right. Yeah, not everybody can win. And that's the only way to sort of like get through the Emmys and not be disgruntled. And in a sort of a bigger picture, it's the only way to like watch TV these days. It's like I have to just realize, yeah, I'm so far behind on that. I can't comment. You know, I remember the days when everything was ending, I was right on top of it. And those days are long gone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I'm up to date with Twin Peaks, which I never thought I would. I've managed to stay up to date with that. Yeah.
And
despite my wife just being like, no, I'm not going to watch it. I've managed to find time to watch all of the first, what, seven, I guess.
Wow. And there's going to be 18. So yeah. Seven into it, are you, so a little more than a third through, are you still feeling it?
Yeah, you know, still feeling it enough to keep watching it and not get behind. I'm not watching like Sunday nights because that's we watch shows together on Sunday nights because my wife is here and she doesn't want to watch Twin Peaks, but right. I catch up during the week. And you know, it's just what I said before, which is there are frustrating episodes and then there are episodes that push things forward and there are things that make you laugh because it is just the audacity of David Lynch to just do these things that should not be done. And then there are other things that are entertaining in their own right. There is a scene in the at the end of episode 7 where it's a wide shot of a bar and there's nobody there except the bartender behind the bar and a guy who's sweeping the floor. And I'm not kidding. You watch the guy with a camera not moving. You watch the guy sweep the floor for like 2 minutes. And then the phone rings and the bartender has a conversation on the phone and then it cuts away. It's like, it's that kind of crap that David Lynch pulls. That's like, I start watching and then it dawns on me and I'm like, oh, how long is this going to go on? And then I just start laughing.
Yeah.
It is. I don't know if I can recommend it to anybody, but I'm still watching it and I'm still kind of amused by it. And it's very strange. And it looks like it's maybe shifting into its second act where the plot such as it is starting to move forward a little bit more. And that's good because, you know, the weird will take you far, but not far enough. So
that's interesting. Well, I will remind you that before the Twin Peaks started, one of your complaints was that in the original that things took so long. Like he would focus on shots that they could.
The ceiling fan.
And you said, you can't do that anymore. Well, I guess you can.
I guess you can. No, that's really like, it doesn't feel like the old Twin Peaks, but it's definitely got that same, we will frustrate the viewers thing going on. And there are moments where I am frustrated and then there are moments where I laugh because I know that he's trying to frustrate me and I get it. I'm like, yeah, okay, you got me. Good one. So yeah, I don't know. It's a funny one, but I am still watching. Hmm. Speaking of the Emmys, by the way, we've got a letter here that I should read now while we're talking about the Emmys from Ninette, I want to say, or Ninette. It's Ninette. In the 650 down the block with Jenny.
Yeah, hanging out down there. Mm-hmm.
And Nanette says, I saw this headline in the Wall Street Journal this morning, Peak TV's new hot profession, the music supervisor. So there is a new Emmy category for music supervisor. And she says, does this mean the contribution of music to a TV show is finally getting the recognition it deserves?
Yes. And or it's finally going to go to someone who doesn't deserve it. No, it's another category to frustrate you on what you think is going to be the clear winner. No, I'm kidding. The Emmys have done so much better work lately. Yeah, that's a newbie. That's going to be good.
That's yeah. I would imagine that that'll be kind of fun, right?
Because I would think the Americans might be in on that one.
That's good. That's good. I'm going to say
good stuff in the Americans.
Westworld. I'm actually kind of I liked the use of music in Westworld. Their piano covers of Radiohead songs and things like that. A lot of really interesting stuff in there,
A couple of the fascination with Radiohead songs.
and then Nanette points out that I know it can be really expensive to have good music in a TV show. I'm not sure whether it's just a budget thing, but man, the music in the sci-fi, I believe, series Dark Matter sucks. It's otherwise an entertaining little show, but the horrible pulsating soundtrack is working my last nerve. It is true, you know, sometimes things like music do not get enough credit for how they pull you through a show or they pull you entirely out of a show. I think that's true. I have a letter here from, this is a tweet. I've got some tweets for you. You ready?
Yes,
this is a Hobo Eric tweet. So it's the highest quality tweet.
Yes.
Hobo Eric.
As always.
He says, I'm pleased to announce that the TVTM podcast is a top tier podcast where I totally concentrate on the podcast and don't check social media. This comes up because last week we talked about how they're the shows that you watch while you're looking at your Twitter feed, and then they're the shows where you pay attention very carefully. And Hobo Eric has slotted us in that top shelf.
Nice.
Where he just, I think, I'd like to say, if you really love us, what you need to do is you need to go in like a closet or maybe even like the bathroom and just close the door, turn out the lights, make it as dark as possible, possibly hide under a blanket, sensory deprivation, and focus entirely on our voices.
Wow. There was the woman who said that there was too much, like, since she's not going to listen anymore, so maybe we shouldn't focus too much on that.
Well, that's part of the, it wraps around.
It's the realism. That's what I like. It's like, that's like real scenery. You know,
this is
Foley work.
It's basically real talk. It's real talk. I hate to break it to you, but that's how people talk is with their mouths. If you're having mouth problems, I don't know if you want to listen to people talk.
I think she gave up a long time ago.
Yeah. Dean, our traveling Dean of the 707, said, the first huge splash of an announcement Apple can make is TV Talk Machine, the television show. Now, I thought, I thank you, Dean. I think we made it clear. I think Apple made it clear that they're looking for the highest quality content.
Yeah, not just content. And, I had to go, before I wrote my piece, by the way, I had to go in and watch Planet of the Apes.
Did you?
Ooh, boy. The editing on that is really bad. It's kind of surprising how bad the editing is.
I have a really hard time with that one.
And it's just, oh boy. It's, it's just Shark Tank, but it's at some point, I mean, like really it's just Shark Tank.
Shark Tank with an escalator.
The escalator is such a cliche, the escalator pitch, elevator pitch, et cetera. Yeah. But anyway, I came away from that thinking, oh, better days are ahead. Yes.
Yeah. Mm. You would think. See, look, I made more mouth noises there. Enjoy. Tim W. tweeted at us, shouldn't the purchase of Netflix or HBO be in consideration for what Apple's thinking because they wouldn't need to ramp? Well, obviously, if they did consider it, they're not going to do it because they hired executives. I'm not sure. I mean, Netflix, I mean, I don't know what the cost would be, but it would be, they must have decided it buy or build, right? What would it cost to buy Netflix or try to pry HBO away from Time Warner or AT&T?
Yeah, I think both of those are not for sale and probably too expensive, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think even if Apple were to overpay for one of them, I think Apple probably did the calculation and said we would be better off investing that money in building our new thing and ramping it up. Rather, unless you feel like the door is going to close, and if you're not in this game at this level in 2 years, you can't be in it. But I don't think Apple believes that that's the case anyway, and that they can invest that money in building their own competitive thing. So.
Yeah,
people always talk about buying, but if Apple bought Netflix, then they have Netflix, and they don't want to do that, and they would have to pay for all of Netflix, and that is probably more than you take that money and invest it in building your own thing, and they think they can do that.
DIY, definitely.
Yeah. Josh wrote in to complain about, we've talked about this many times before, complain about how network TV, broadcast TV in the U.S., doesn't do what British networks do. They are forced to put in fluff and drag a series out to 23 episodes long. The Netflix and Amazon 10 or 13 are pretty good and tight. Also, cable would go in that category that Josh is talking about. Mm-hmm. So my question for you is, at what point do the networks just entirely stop this concept of a 22-episode order? At what point do the broadcast networks join the rest of television in the world basically as saying, you know, we want to start buying, we want 10 or 12 at a time? Or will they just keep on buying 22 episodes of shows that work well forever?
Well, I think they've certainly gone away from it at times, not enough to make it, you know, sort of a lasting trend. I mean, they're buying shorter runs on purpose.
The Good Place, which we mentioned earlier, that's a good example. I think that was a 10-episode order or something
If even 10. I don't even know if it got to 10. And then 8, and then they split it, which was weird. I thought that was... Yeah. I mean, that kind of hurts it. That's just stupidity, but...
But then they renewed it again, and it's another short run. It's another 10 episodes.
Yeah, so
like that,
I think, is along the cable model is fine. The wonky longer answer, I'll try to shorten it, is that their cost structure is out of whack and nobody knows how to fix it. And it's built for 22 episodes. Technically, it's built for reruns, which don't really exist anymore. It's built for a season, which doesn't exist anymore. And, you know, the math was always wrong. It's a 36-week season. There's 22 episodes. You're going to have reruns, which was a thing. And then when reruns weren't working, you would fit in smaller seasons, quote unquote, around your holiday programming and stretch it all out. But then that never accounted for that the summer is in play, and turning the lights out is what led them to kind of where they are now. There's just so many problems to overcome, but really it's a financial structure. And I've been trying to talk to people about this, like why are they overpaying for shows and overpaying for talent? And, you know, it's like, if you can make, I mean, I'm sure their argument is that, like, for every Scandal or, you know, The Good Wife or ones that really do work, you want 22 episodes. And, and I would say the good, then do, if it's still going, keep, do it or renew it. I'm sure you can find out within like 6 episodes or so, whether, you know, or have them immediately roll into a second, you know, give them 10 or 13 and have them immediately roll into a second season since you've got everybody together. And you've, you know, it won't be timely, but if it's a drama, it doesn't really have to be. There's ways around it. Nobody's really thinking. I mean, people are thinking about it. That's the wrong way to put it. But no one's changing it. No one's got to the point where like, yeah, we all need to do this. But yeah, I mean, if you could make, technically to make that work, this is the long answer. Technically to make that work is you have to take 22 episodes or 24 episodes and, you know, come up with 10 and 10 or 10 and 13, whatever, some combination, and make two separate series at the same cost. So that means you're halving your salaries and their budgets and all that. So you can make two series with the same amount of money. That's one way they can do it. But they, you know, I'm not a finance guy, and they haven't been able to figure out the cost structure. It's killing the industry though. So
yeah, I think you make a good point that when you do have a big hit, the answer is just they want to put their foot to the floor and go with it. And I get that. But you would think at some point the structure will have changed to the point where, like, no, people will be like, 24, that's just insane. We're not going to do 24, 23, 22 episodes. I wonder about it sometimes with shows like all the CW shows, especially like all the superhero shows they're doing. Uh-huh. That would they be better off saying we're going to do 13 episodes of The Flash every year, and we're going to do 13 episodes of Arrow every year, and we're going to do, and that allows them to bring in more different stuff. The problem is, if you're a writer or producer, maybe you could work on other shows too. If you're one of the actors, you're only going to get 13 episodes. That kind of sucks for them. So, you know, I don't know. It's nobody's doing that anymore, though. It's like everything else other than broadcast has gotten off that train, but they're still,
yeah, broadcast still on the train. Is last on a lot of things. But yeah, you know, there's, if you think about it, it's, you could still pay an actor, maybe not as much as you would 22 episodes, but you can still pay him a good salary for,
yeah, a good salary for, yeah, for half the work, and then they could do other stuff, yeah, the rest of the year, right?
Right. And then, you know, the more important thing, because TV is a writer's medium, is that you don't water down your product by having 24 episodes and hoping that, you know, 12 of them are really good, and then the other 12 you kind of wince your way through, or 5 you wince, and then I don't know, 7 you cry. I don't know. You just really water down the product when it's that many episodes.
Yeah. All right. I've got two more. Listener Dan just sent this to me moments ago.
Oh, hot off the internet.
Is a Better Call Saul pickup a sure thing? They mentioned on this week's finale episode podcast they were still waiting for word. I hope they get a chance to continue. That's got to be a sure thing, right?
Yes, I would think it is. It's a sure thing. All yeah, right. I think they want. I think that's another show along with, you know, like The Americans, different networks, but where the ratings aren't so much the important part. It's the prestige part of it. So, yeah, I would assume so. I think that they want to tell a story, and tell a really complete story, and they want to get it right. So I think they're going to do the right thing and continue that.
Yeah, it sounds like they're confident, but that they're, among many other things, those two key executives at Sony TV left, so they got to work that out.
That's
Sony.
Yeah, and
I can't see it not continuing.
It's really interesting.
Donnie,
that ending up on Apple.
One last letter, and I disagree. You're going to disagree too, but I think this is an interesting letter. Donnie in the 206 writes in, Tim and Jason, I think I've stumbled upon a new genre of television. I call it beautiful nonsense. Mm. I use this term to describe shows that are visually spectacular, but with writing and storytelling that feels empty and hollow. Recent examples for me include Preacher, American Gods, and Legion.
Oh.
I made it about 5 episodes into each before realizing I didn't care about anyone or anything appearing on screen, but just wanted the pretty, pretty pictures beamed directly into my brain while I tripped the light fantastic. Can you think of any other examples of beautiful nonsense? Donnie in the 206. Oh, Donnie. Well, Tim's going to disagree about Legion, so am I, and I'm going to disagree about American Gods, too.
Yeah.
They are beautiful. I agree a bit with that part.
Mm-hmm.
But nonsense, I don't think they're nonsense.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I definitely do not think Legion is nonsense, and you've watched more of American Gods than I have. And, I get what he's getting at. Sure. My joke would be that network television is beautiful nonsense. You know, everybody's beautiful and all the shows are nonsense. But, I get that thing where it's like, so everything's so beautifully shot and like random, and it kind of like, you just got to go with it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Maybe Twin Peaks is like that, right? I mean, in his worldview, but then again, we would probably disagree. I mean, you've watched it, so you.
Twin Peaks is nonsense for sure. Is it beautiful? Mm-hmm. Is the question? I'm not sure if I would call it beautiful. It's just strange nonsense. I get the concept too that there are shows that look really great, and they're not particularly pleasing when you think about it. But I don't think these would be in that category for me. I think there are probably like, what was the show that was the follow-up to Sons of Anarchy that was about that was medieval times or something like that?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. That was the Bastard
Executioner, right?
Yes.
That I didn't see it, but I heard from a lot of people who said it's kind of like, it's really cool that it's set in this setting and it's really interesting to look at, and there's nothing there. I mean, there are a lot of shows like that where they put in the money to make this kind of interesting thing. HBO has tried that sometimes for their successes that they've had. They've had some failures too. It happens, but I don't think I would put Legion or American Gods in that category. But hey, it doesn't have to work for everyone. At least you got something out of it with the visuals, even if the story didn't work for you.
Like, right. I mean, you could say that Sense8 was maybe beautiful nonsense.
You really could. And again, mm-hmm. even though predisposed to like that show, I definitely could see somebody say that it's beautiful nonsense because it looked amazing and was kind of hard to understand for some people mm-hmm. to follow it. And I think maybe sometimes as a creator, I think maybe that's okay that they think, yeah, that's, you're going to have a fun ride, that you're going to trip the light fantastic. And if you don't get it, we don't really care. But yeah, I think Legion and American Gods are playing fair.
Yeah, I exactly. I think there's a lot going on in each of those, on the writing side and the storytelling side and the character development side, which would excuse them. But I get what he's doing, so props for that.
And I've got a nerd update, which is that they've set the premiere date for the new Star Trek series. So it's going to premiere on CBS in September, late in September. Mm-hmm. And then they're doing something that I think is very smart, which is mm-hmm. the second. So that'll air on CBS Network. Mm-hmm. The second episode will be available immediately on CBS All Access. And then they'll release new episodes every week after that on CBS All Access. So they will have this sort of like using the binge part of your brain mm-hmm. to get you to sign up for CBS All Access, which is, here's episode one. Would you like to watch the next episode? It's available right now mm-hmm. if you sign up for CBS All Access, which is what the whole purpose of showing it is. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that works for them.
Yeah, and people are going to watch that model and see.
Yeah.
But again, it's not, there's not like enough on that CBS All Access.
Network to streaming is a really interesting idea.
Yeah.
Although somebody made the point that if it does really well in the ratings, there's going to be an interesting conversation about, like, why are we not showing this on CBS?
Yeah, right. I mean,
the answer is because we want people to give us money. But still, it's interesting. We'll see what happens. All right, here's how you can reach us. podcast@tvtalkmachine.com is the best way. But you can also post on our Facebook group, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. You can tweet at us at TVTM. That works great. If you join The Incomparable by becoming an Incomparable member, mm-hmm. you get a whole bunch of bonuses. You can support TVTM directly from there, and that money comes to us by going to theincomparable.com/members. And one of the benefits of being an Incomparable member is there's a members-only Slack group that has a TVTM channel, and I do pop in there usually before we go on and say, we're about to go on, do you have any questions? Which is where member Dan's question earlier about Better Call Saul came from, as well as a couple of the other letters that we got. So
nice, that's member Dan.
Another way to reach us is to become a member, and you can also support the podcast. And that's it. Tim, I am off to the 115 degrees of Phoenix, Arizona for the weekend.
Oh, my Lord.
To pick up my daughter from her camp and see my mom. Yeah.
Do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll do
I'm
that.
Sure, she'll be welcoming to come home. Yes.
Yeah. It'll be really nice to come back to the fog. That's going to be the thing. but we'll be back next week with another TV Talk Machine. Until then, Tim, have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye, everybody.